A monster.
You think I've done that to you?
It was an honest question.
Maybe, I said, and swallowed, and said the thing I'd been thinking ever since Lucien Moriarty dragged me out of that bathroom stall.
Holmes, I don't know if we're going to get out of this one alive.
Her eyes were shining.
I know.
I forced a laugh.
Any final words?
She shrugged a shoulder.
Holmes, I pulled it off, the comforter, the sheets, all those mountains of white, clearing a space beside me.
Come here, I said, then winced.
I mean, if you want to.
She sat down gingerly at the edge of the bed.
Jamie.
The word hovered in the air.
I'm sorry, she said all at once.
For what?
I'm sorry, Jamie.
I waited. Sometimes I could read her as clearly as though her thoughts were scrolling across the sky, and sometimes she was the most unknowable creature in the world.
When I met you, I was still... I hate this.
Words are imprecise, I remembered her saying once.
Too many shades of meaning, and people use them to lie.
Holmes had this look on her face like she was trying to drag something up from the basement of her heart.
Try, I said.
I was... I think the only way to describe it is wild.
Wild? As she spoke, she left long pauses between her sentences.
Or hungry. Like I'd been kept in a room for years and given enough food and water to survive. Then I was brought out to a buffet, and there were all these people there who had been eating for years. I knew that I wasn't one of them. I was hardly even a person. I just wanted... I was starving, but it had made me sharp. The world was too soft, too complacent. I hated it for that. This isn't right either. Maybe I was being held underwater. Maybe I held myself there. When I met you, I'd been thinking I was at the end of it all.
She drew her knees up to her chest.
The end of me, I suppose. I think it was true that I was at the end of whatever that self was. But I had to go off and end it myself, do you understand? Alone. I wanted... By the time I saw you again, I wanted to have found my way back to a beginning.
I didn't understand her at all. I thought, I'll never know anyone better than I know her.
I'm sorry,
she said simply. Her dark hair fell down around her face.
I should have told you what I was planning. I panicked. August was dead, and everyone else had scattered, and there were weapons in play, and you weren't safe. All I could think was, if I can get Watson to D.I. Green, he'll be out of harm's way. She'll know what to do. I skipped all the other steps and went straight there. I get so impatient, but I was wrong, and I...
You let your brother walk. I tried to keep my voice firm. Holmes shook her head rapidly.
He would have walked anyway. You couldn't arrest him, then. Maybe you still can't. Not with his money, not with his team of lawyers. Milo got sued maybe twice a week. He had a crisis team on 24-hour call. He would eat the Sussex Constabulary for breakfast. And now, I don't know, maybe he'll see justice for it.
I hope so. If not, there isn't going to be anybody left to hold responsible, I said. For August.
There will be. I might have started this, but I'll finish it with putting Lucien away. And even if he wasn't the one to kill August, I'll still consider that case closed. Maybe I'm the one responsible for him dying. But I was a child, and I hadn't been given a compass, and I made a terrible decision. I thought I'd get him fired from being my tutor. I don't think that makes me responsible for his death. Maybe that makes me a bad person.
She straightened her shoulders.
But I don't think I am.
I don't think you're a bad person.
You did.
I don't anymore, I said, and found that I meant it.
I want to be good, she said. I want to be good without being nice. Can I do that?
I smiled despite myself.
I like you best when you aren't nice.
I'd been holding out hard against the urge to touch her, but she turned to me now in a rush, buried her face against my neck. My arms went up and around her almost of their own accord.
I hate this.
She wiped at her face with an angry hand.
All week I've been crying. And why? Over you? Over Lucien Moriarty?
I'm getting his blood all over your dress, I told her.
I'd cry too.
You're not still dating that girl, she said.
I raised my eyebrows. That wasn't a question.
You're not wearing her scarf anymore.
When did you ever see me wear that scarf? In that stairwell? Her quicksilver smile.
I have my sources.
Is that what you've been doing all this time? I asked, stroking her hair.
Watching me? Would it be terrible if I had?
I exhaled. A little terrible. She pulled back to see my face.
You don't think it's terrible?
I don't.
You think it's kind of hot, actually.
That smile again, there and gone. Did you just say, kind of hot? Who are you?
Most recently I was a fashion vlogger, she said.
And then she kissed me, quickly, like an impulse, like an accident.
Hey,
I said softly, pulling back. She tugged at my collar. I felt her hand trace its way down, and she undid the top button, slowly, sliding it between her fingers. It was like this with her, fits and starts, nothing I could ever see coming. I'd never thought we'd be here again. Holmes, I said, reaching up to touch her hands, to fold them in mine.
Do you forgive me?
You sound like you're making some kind of decision, I said, because she was scaring me a little.
Do you?
I paused, thinking. Not long ago, I'd wanted everything from her, for her to be my confidant, my general, my best and only friend. I wanted her to be the other half of me, like we together made a coin. She's the king's head to my tails. I loved her like you would the person you'd always wanted to be, and in return I would have followed her anywhere, excused any action, fought to keep her hoisted high on her throne. When that myth I'd made of her shattered, I didn't know what to do. This last year, any thought I had of her felt wrong, skewed. How could I understand what had happened when I had put up so many lenses between my experience of her and the girl herself? Holmes wasn't a myth or a king. She was a person, and to have a relationship with a person, you had to treat them like one. Can I forgive you a little now? I asked. And then a little more tomorrow and the next day, if there is a next day?
Yes,
she said quickly, like it was more than she had asked for, like I might take it back. Provided you don't blow anything up, of course.
Yes.
Or try to look in my ears again while I'm sleeping.
Yes,
she said, laughing. That look on her face, always like she was surprised to be laughing, like it was something involuntary and slightly shameful, like a sneeze. I couldn't take it. Oh, I missed you, I said, gripping her shoulders. She was here. She was here, and I could touch her, and God, how could I be so lucky? I said it again, like a compulsion. I missed you, I missed you.
Jamie,
she said helplessly. She said my name again, trying out the word's edges, almost like she was saying it aloud for the first time. Since when do you call me Jamie? It came out soft, a little dangerous.
Why don't you call me Charlotte?
She whispered. Her fingers went back up to my neck, and then followed an invisible line up to my cheek, traced my lips.
Why don't you call me by my name?
Because she'd been a girl from a story I loved. Because when we first met, she told me to call her Holmes, and when Charlotte told me to do something, I listened. Do you want me to? I asked.
No,
she said urgently.
No, I only want to know why.
Because I needed a name for you that was mine, I said, and her eyes went wide and dark with something I didn't have a word for. An hour later, I still had her in my arms.
26. Charlotte. We roused ourselves, finally, when there was a knock on the door. You have 30 minutes before the car arrives to take you to Sheringford, Milo's assistant said, handing me a bundle. She had bought dark clothing in our sizes and then had it pressed. It was far nicer than anything I'd been able to purchase myself this past year. The shoes, in particular, were things of beauty. I thought that I might love her. I felt very loving just then. Watson and I took turns showering. Back in the room, I hummed a little to myself as I did up the buttons of my shirt. He laced up his new black boots. He was smiling. He had always wanted a pair like mine. How are you feeling? He asked when he'd finished. For me, anything done in a bed with a boy was a fraught prospect. I didn't know how long that would be true, if it would be true forever. Several times tonight we had to stop ourselves, talk through what we were doing and how we felt about it. It sounded like a tedious exercise, and perhaps in some ways it was. I didn't care. How was I feeling? Like one of my Aunt Araminta's beehives, buzzing, like I had a city inside of me. With Watson, I had always been made better. I had spent the last year mourning our friendship, but knowing, too, it was better to be away. And now? Now I'd have to keep on mourning our friendship, I supposed. He and I had been here once before, in a hotel in Prague. But before we could reconfigure what we were to one another, everything had disintegrated around us. Tonight, his dark, tousled hair was half dry, and he smelled the same as I did, as we'd used the same shampoo. He'd done the half cuffs on his trousers because they were, like all his other pairs, a bit too long, and there was nothing new about his shoulders, but an hour before, I had mapped them anyway with my fingers. I loved them, his shoulders. He'd watched me, wondering, while I touched his wrists, his palms. What are you remembering? I fitted his hand against my hip and told him the three other times he'd put it just there. A bookshop in South London, by accident, on the flight back to England to take my phone from my pocket, while brushing our teeth in the same bathroom in Sussex because he needed to open a drawer and I'd been in the way. I was unmarked by what had happened tonight, but his torso was darkening with bruises where that bastard had driven in his fist, and there was still a bit of blood under his fingernails, and there was a look to him that was altogether new, wary and alert and impossibly sad, even now, especially now, one I'd first seen when I'd barged in on him beating the life out of Lucy and Moriarty. I thought I'd come in to save him, but Watson had needed a partner, not an avenging angel. He had a lovely left hook. He had a nick on his jaw where he'd cut himself shaving. How had I just seen it now? I wanted to examine it with my fingers, to put my lips there, and so I did. He made a sound deep in his throat. He pulled me down onto his lap, his breath coming fast and warm, and when the knock came, I tried not to snarl at it.
"Hide the knives,"
Watson said, laughing at my expression, his hands caught up in my hair. "Mr. Watson and Miss Holmes," the assistant said through the door. "Your car is here." Nothing cut the feeling of it. Not the dash out the door to the car, not the rain that had started to break up the snow, not the not knowing of what would be waiting there for us at Sheringford. I had the pieces of a plan. Watson helped me rearrange them to my satisfaction, or something approximating it. So much of what we needed to know this past year had been in our separate hands. Anna Morgan Vilk, for one. Had I stayed at school, I would have known her for what she was. I could have done my work without leaving school, without leaving Watson, and if I told myself I'd gone away only to track down Lucy and Moriarty, I knew it for a half-truth. Had I stayed, I would have had to face the mess I'd made. Had I stayed, Watson would not have been wearing that scarf when I'd met him. It shouldn't have mattered to me, the idea that some kind, resourceful girl had been kissing him, because I knew Watson well enough to know that in my absence there would be another girl beside him. He wouldn't pine forever. Why should he? The thought gave me comfort. It made me furious. It made me reach out and take his hand more forcefully than I'd meant to. He raised an eyebrow, then intertwined his fingers with mine. What was wrong with me? It was, as they say, the question. The lovely, buzzing feeling I'd had wasn't gone, but it was shifting into something else. In Sheringford Town, all was seemingly quiet. I counted three police cars lingering on side streets, their engines on and their lights off. No doubt Lucy and Moriarty had mentioned that Watson would perhaps try to return to school. Still, our black car cut quietly through the night, and the cruisers stayed where they were. Getting through the school gates would be another matter. "Would you please find an alley to pull over into?" I asked the driver as we drove through downtown. "We'll need to climb into the trunk." It was an ignominious return to Sheringford, to be sure, but I found I didn't mind it. We folded ourselves in quickly, and Watson put a hand on that spot on my hip. The fourth time in a car boot in Connecticut, I thought. and when the car was stopped at the Sheringford entrance by the police, the driver said something muffled about being a teacher returning to use the copier, provided his fake ID, and we trundled slowly up to the Sciences Building parking lot. The car stopped. Watson tensed but didn't move as the driver rounded to pop the trunk. He leaned over us, unseeing. The zipper on his jacket was close enough to swing into my hair, and took his briefcase from behind Watson's head. I had a moment to see where he'd parked, the corner of the lot that I directed him to, one I remembered having a cluster of thick bushes. He put the bag over his shoulder, then he shut the trunk, gently. It didn't latch. Footsteps.
"Evening, officer," I heard him say. "Just here to use the copier."
"I'll let you into the building," the cop said, her voice stern. "Do you know how long you'll be?"
"I'm doing class prep. Won't be more than an hour."
As he kept talking about the quiz he was writing, I heard them make their way to the entrance. His voice, then hers, began to fade. This was our chance, while their backs were turned to the lot. Our driver hadn't said midnight, our code word for policemen lingering in the area. We were in the clear. By the time the officer returned, Watson and I were in the bushes. By the time she returned to her car, we'd made it to the Carter Hall tunnel entrance.
"Elizabeth texted me the key code earlier," he whispered, pressed up against the door. 57482.
"You're much quieter than you used to be." I punched in the code.
"Thanks," he said. "I've been practicing."
And when the door clicked open, we crept down the stairs. We were a half hour early for Watson's rendezvous with Elizabeth. The way time had passed tonight reminded me of an accordion of all things. As we went on, it expanded here, contracted there. Our time in the safe house had felt like mere minutes, our mad rush to Connecticut, hours. And now we would wait for Watson's ex-girlfriend to tell us information about Anna Morgan Vilk, I most likely knew, while Lucien Moriarty mobilized the police force to haul us in for assaulting him. I hadn't been in the access tunnels in more than a year, but I remembered their layout. The Carter Hall entrance put us by the academic buildings and the chapel, far from Watson's dorm. Hopefully any searchers would be stationed there and not down by us. Any detective worth their salt would know to search these tunnels for a missing Sheringford student, but then only Shepherd really seemed particularly salty, and I supposed we had him on our side. Besides, the tunnel access code hadn't been changed since Elizabeth had texted him. That could mean everything. That could mean nothing. That left the obvious fact that the access tunnels, which were customarily lit day in, day out, were tonight in total darkness. Watson's hand in mine, a murmur.
"Should I turn on my phone's flashlight?"
I waited for my eyes to adjust, but the darkness was too complete.
"No,"
I told him, running a hand against the wall.
"Follow me and stay silent."
I heard him slip off his boots and tuck them under his arm. We moved slowly, three doors on the left before the hallway turned, a generator, a water heater, an empty room that had once been used by snowbound nuns for prayer. The latter would work for our purposes. All I wanted was a room to hide in while we finalized our plan, but the door was locked. My kit had been strapped to my leg below my dress, but when I'd changed, I'd thrown a few picks into my useless little purse and left the rest. I only had my snake and my variable tension wrench, quick and dirty tools. One-size-fits-all tools. I could break the lock if I made a mistake. I hadn't picked a lock in the dark in some time. I hadn't attempted a lock I didn't have the specific picks for in years. The night was looking up. As I positioned my picks, Watson shifted behind me. He was always so impatient. Moving his weight around, cracking his knuckles, visibly counting ceiling tiles. The world was immensely interesting to him, but only the parts of it he wasn't supposed to be studying. He didn't have the sort of laser focus that a delicate art like this demanded, and yes, there it was, the lock giving under my fingers.
"Holmes," he was whispering. "Holmes."
When I didn't reply, he reached out and physically removed my hands from the door.
"Do you hear that?"
I had been too focused on my work, on listening to my fingers, to hear the girls around the corner. They had to be girls, or slim boys wearing very smart shoes, The hard tap-tap, shuffle-tap gave it away, two of them moving slowly through the dark without speaking. Watson and I put our backs to the cinder block wall. It was only luck that they didn't have on their phone flashlights, that we were wearing all black, that the exit sign above the Carter Hall door had been turned out with the rest of the power, that we were, for all intents and purposes, invisible. They stopped just feet from us.
"You're meeting them here?"
one whispered.
"When?"
20 minutes.
"Do you know what you'll say?"
"Anna, we've gone over this a million times," Elizabeth said. "Of course I know what to say."
27. Jamie. I couldn't see them. See her. I couldn't see anything in that dark. All I knew was Holmes's arm flung across my chest, keeping me against the wall, like I had any desire to move. Like I'd be able to, even if I wanted.
"You'll need to go," Elizabeth said.
I knew that whisper. I'd heard it over the phone at night, her wishing me goodnight after her roommate was asleep. I'd heard it at the lunch table when she was snarking about Tom's new sweater vest under her breath. Neither of them said anything for a moment.
"You don't trust me," Elizabeth said.
She wasn't whispering now.
"I trust you," Anna said. "My dad says I shouldn't, you know, but I do."
Elizabeth sighed, a pitchy sound.
"Well, if your dad says it, it must be true. And sane, completely sane. He doesn't have to be sending me to Sherrinford, okay? He could have just forgotten about me like everyone else. It's not a lot for him to ask for, that I help him out with this. Jamie and Charlotte killed his brother, okay? The police aren't even looking at them."
"I know." She didn't sound convinced.
"Maybe I should call your dad," Anna hissed. "Maybe I should remind him that Lucien Moriarty," she said the name with such pride, "holds the deed to his apartment in New York, or that one phone call can get him fired. My dad owns the Virtuoso School."
Beside me, Holmes's spine went stiff and straight.
"Because this is the way to make sure someone's loyal to you," Elizabeth said. "Make the same threats every chance you get. Gloat. This is total gloating. It's gross."
"Is the money gross, too?"
"I'm not doing it for the money," Elizabeth said.
"Then give it back."
"You haven't even given it to me yet, so how can I give it back? We came down here to get it, not to have you question my loyalty again. I wasn't the one who cut the power."
"No, you're just the one with the imaginary $1,000.
"Screw you, seriously."
Anna started off down the hall.
"I'll get you your money. You can have your pathetic shopping spree."
As soon as Anna was safely down the hall, Elizabeth whipped out her phone and tapped out a message. The light from the screen illuminated her hair, her upturned nose. It cast shadows under her eyes. Had she looked up in that moment, she would have seen Holmes and I staring her down, a pair of vultures ready to pick her bones. But she didn't. She turned as she texted, looking down after Anna's retreating form, and when she'd finished, she locked her phone. The screen went dark. My ex-girlfriend might have been plotting against me, kissed me and lied to me and gaslit me in my own dorm room, but she hadn't gotten too far into my heart. Had I known deep down that something had been wrong from the start? Maybe. But maybe that gave me credit for intuition I didn't have. Even if Elizabeth was being blackmailed, even if her actions weren't her fault, she could have told me what was going on. I'd been too hurt to let Elizabeth all the way in, too lonely not to be alone. I'd been missing Holmes with a ferocity I didn't understand I felt until she was back beside me, and maybe Elizabeth had known all that. Maybe she had been scared of how I would have reacted if she'd told me the truth about Anna. Maybe she'd thought I would have blamed her, that I would have run. In a way, I was responsible for all of this.
"Come on," Anna called. "If you want your money so bad... My dad will be here soon."
With a snort, Elizabeth started down the hall. There was so little to be relieved about right now, but I let out a silent breath anyway. Beside me, Holmes relaxed. Then the phone in her back pocket buzzed with a text.
28. Charlotte. When I went looking for a source to keep me apprised of the goings-on at Sherrinford School in my absence, I needed someone that I could rely on. My former roommate, Lena, would seem the obvious choice. We trusted one another. She was enterprising and resourceful. She responded to texts within seconds, even when in the shower. For a few weeks at the beginning of the school year, I had asked her for updates, but she wasn't close enough to Watson anymore to be able to give me workable data. He's fine, I guess. Didn't eat much at lunch today, but maybe he's cutting now for rugby. He was bulking before. LOL, gross, right? How is London, girl? Heart emoji, detective emoji, two shopping bag emojis. It wasn't quite what I was looking for. I hadn't wanted information on his personal life, or I'd told myself I hadn't. I only wanted to know that he was safe. I was on the cusp of writing my awful older brother for help when I'd received a call on an October afternoon. I'd answered only because it came from a blocked number. I had hoped that my Uncle Leander might be calling. I always hoped, with him. I don't know if you remember me. I'm Elizabeth, from last year. I got your number from his phone. She hadn't had to say who he was. I get that this is weird, me calling, but I think he misses you a lot, and it would help him out if you got in touch, even to tell him goodbye. I didn't respond. I was sitting at a table in my favorite cafe by the Thames, and the water was quite loud, and I had nothing to say to this girl. Do you even care if he's okay? Of course I do, I snapped. She speaks, Elizabeth said with a lonely sort of laugh, and that was when I knew that if she wasn't dating him, she would be soon. But if she wouldn't tell me that, I'd pretend I didn't know. It was more convenient for my purposes, which were taking shape as we spoke. I need time, I'd told her. I want to come and see him in the new year, and I'll tell him goodbye then. But for now, could you text me every now and then and tell me how he's doing? Make sure that there aren't any more incidents like what happened with Bryony Downs. Useful for her, an end date for her boyfriend's psychic misery. Useful for me, a regular word or two on Watson's well-being. At first, that was all it was. A line here about where he was applying to college. A line there about how the rugby team was doing. There was nothing useful about this information, really, and still I craved it. I reread her messages in transit, at my desk, in bed when I woke in the morning. Jamie has a cold. 2 days later, he's better. Prosaic things, things no one would care about. I found I cared immensely. What was she getting in return? I had always loathed psychology, but I began to think these messages gave her a sense of control. Her boyfriend was still upset about a girl in his past. Ergo, by managing that girl's knowledge of him, Elizabeth could feel as though she had control over her relationship. It was untrue, of course. You couldn't control how someone else felt. You could hardly control how you felt most of the time. And so the holidays came and went. New Year's came and went. Elizabeth pressed me for plans to visit, to finally have it out with Watson, and I provided her with none. This week, when I began getting messages that said, I'm worried about Jamie, I think bad things are happening to him and he's not telling me, and he's getting hauled in to see the dean and I think he's suspended, I thought I knew why. Her plan was to force my hand. If I wouldn't come to help ease Watson's mind, I would perhaps come if I thought he were in danger. If she had to manufacture the danger herself, so be it. It seemed a petty reason to delete someone's school presentation, but then I was the girl desperately rereading text messages about Watson's new shoes. But Elizabeth Hartwell, of course that was her name, was nothing if not a survivor. Watching her walk away now, watching the darkened hallway where I could hear her walk away, I realized I had given her too little credit. She had been put into a situation where her family was in danger. She had been blackmailed into going along with Anna Morgan Vilk's plan. She was forced into hurting Watson, a boy she clearly cared for, and in response, she had called in the one person she thought could help, knowing full well that person was me. The text on my phone read, I don't know if you're coming with Jamie tonight, but you need to be careful. Lucien Moriarty and his daughter are in the tunnels. The police are everywhere. I knew that was what it said, because Watson dragged me into the now unlocked prayer room, shut the door, pulled the phone from my hands, and read it out to me in a voice shimmering with anger.
Jamie seems like he's forgiven Tom, he said, scrolling up with his thumbs. Jamie's dad keeps picking him up to go somewhere. Jamie is rereading his last bow, He looked sad. Jamie and I had a picnic today. What the hell is this, Holmes? How long has this been going on?
Keep your voice down, I said. What else could I say?
My voice. You're worried about my voice. Jesus Christ, this goes back for months. This goes back to homecoming, to when she asked me out. Do you have some kind of plan, the two of you? God!
He spun around, and the light from my screen strobed up and down the cinder block wall.
I thought it was bad when you disappeared. I thought it was the worst thing. The worst thing. But this is worse.
I told you I was keeping tabs on you. I needed to know you were safe. It came out small. I needed to know Lucien wasn't coming after you.
Yes, he does really love to ruin picnics, doesn't he? Rugby games, my shoes. He just loves to ruin my shoes. All of that was necessary information. It wasn't you washing your hands of me and then getting to keep being my friend by proxy.
What you saw out there, she's being coerced. She's not working with Anna because she wants to.
I got that, he snapped.
I went to him and put my hands on his shoulders. He shrugged them off, clutching his boots to his chest.
Lucien's here, he said. Somewhere. Anna is here. Call Detective Shepard. Call Leander. Do whatever you need to do.
And what will you do?
I'm going to think about some of my life choices, he said.
This was not an unreasonable response to the situation. Still, I swallowed. The room was cold and dark and bare, and Watson was in sock feet on the concrete floor. If I were him, I'd be looking for a metaphor. Instead, I said, I'm sorry. Watson turned to stare at me, my phone still in his hands. The light from the screen made me flinch.
You're sorry for a lot of things, aren't you?
He said. We only had 10 minutes until we were meant to meet Elizabeth, and if we'd had a plan before, we didn't now. The worst was knowing that this betrayal of mine was fairly small in the grand scheme of recent betrayals, and that given the proper amount of time, a few days, perhaps a week, Watson would no longer be mad at me. It made it difficult for me to take his anger seriously, as its timing was so inconvenient. He was being a bit of a monster. He was doing that by being human. In short, I did mean my apology. I would not have done anything different. I thought it very stupid for Watson to go thundering out into the darkened access tunnels, and yet he did. And then I wondered if these were the thoughts a horrible person would have, if perhaps I hadn't changed in the slightest, that any development I'd made as a human being had been in a vacuum and not in the more demanding arena of my day-to-day life, or that perhaps it was Watson, my indispensable Watson, who brought out the very worst of me, the part of me that loved someone. And then I thought, Igress Cherry Medendo, I have come looking for my heart, only to be broken by it, and, how pathetic, I am quoting proverbs in a grungy empty room while my idiot best friend is stomping off to get his idiot self killed, and there was no real way to rid oneself of oneself, there was no real way to imagine it, Watson dead, myself dead, or Watson gone, and his mother and her faith that she had found herself a partner. My veins burned. They burned horribly, and my head was a broken steam valve, and it was like I was under the porch at Watson's family home, dug into the snow to preserve my own body prematurely. It would be less work in the end. And really, I had put my oxycodone in my bag as a challenge to myself. I carried it as a challenge. It would be the same thing to have been rid of it months ago, and I threw the pills on the ground and crushed them under my heel. There. If Lucien Moriarty was in these tunnels, I would find him, and I would deal with him myself. I found that, right then, I had a need to break someone open. I would see his blood spilled all over the floor.
29. Jamie. I'd done some stupid things in my life. Selfish things. The occasional well-intentioned thing that still nearly got me killed. That made this a hat trick, then. The issue wasn't Holmes, or the issue was Holmes, and the issue was also Elizabeth. And fear, and sleep deprivation, and being utterly in the dark and out of control, while also knowing that A, she'd been keeping things from me again, when not 2 hours ago she was apologizing for that very thing, while B,
My now very firmly ex-girlfriend had the sort of bickering session with Lucien Moriarty's illicit daughter one would expect from a pair of divorcees, while C, my kid's sister, was somewhere held captive and who knew what was happening to her, and D, Lucien Moriarty himself, was probably stalking these corridors looking to end me, while E, I, the utter idiot, couldn't think clearly about any of this, couldn't make a plan, could only hear the heavy beating of my blood, and F, lash out at Holmes out of fear, because nothing had changed, nothing. And then I'd wanted to do the thing my old therapist had told me about, walking away and calming down, and G, I was at G already, wasn't I? I had frittered away minutes in this hallway when I could have apologized and been done with it already, and still, even when I turned to put my hand on the doorknob, I knew it was already too late. By now, I knew the sound a gun made as it was being cocked. "Going somewhere," Lucien Moriarty said behind me. Some distant part of me thought, he's been waiting years to say that to someone. The rest of me was screaming. "Hands up," he said. He'd lost the Welsh accent in favor of his own, and it was unnerving to hear a voice not unlike August's arranging my execution. "Okay," I said, obeying. Like a fool. How could he even see me? The hallway was pitch black. "Dad," Anna was saying, somewhere farther away. "Dad, what do you need me to do?"
"A flashlight go."
The cinder block wall in front of me went fluorescent.
"Turn. Slowly."
I did, flinching as my eyes adjusted. Lucien in silhouette, and still I could see his cut lip, his two black eyes, his hands around a pistol. An explosion of light from behind him that had to come from his daughter's phone.
"On your knees," he said, and I lowered myself painfully to the floor.
"Dad," Anna said, and this time she sounded terrified. That made two of us. Lucien took a step forward, another. He held the gun steady.
"Now," he said, not 3 feet away, "we'll just wait. Where there's smoke, there's fire."
And just like that, the door behind me opened.
"Lucien,"
Holmes said. She stepped forward, close enough that I could feel her looming over me. He kept the gun trained on my face.
"Do you want to skip the formalities, then, and go right to the conversation?"
"Which conversation?"
she asked, levelly.
"The one where I apologize for what I did to August, again. You could have just called, or blackmailed my parents, again. Has that worked so well the last time?"
"Did it," he said.
I could hear the smirk in Holmes's voice.
"It got your idiot brother killed, didn't it? A win in my book."
Anna's light wobbled wildly. I shut my eyes against it, against Holmes maligning August, even though I knew she didn't mean it.
"Girl," Lucien snapped at Anna without turning around. "Keep your hands steady."
"You could turn back on the lights," Holmes said. "Though I imagine you want a certain amount of drama for this confrontation."
"You always have this need to mouth off," he sucked on his cut lip.
"He used to tell me about that when he'd call on the train back from your house. He'd go back to that awful bedsit in Eastbourne. That was all he could afford on the pittance your father paid him. And he would call me, eating beans from a tin, and say, it was like she was raised by wolves." I kept myself from startling. Lucien was a wicked mimic. He had all of it, August's strangled sincerity, his doubt.
He'd say, "She doesn't understand authority. She thinks she's some ultimate power. She's so smart, but she's a hazard to herself."
And then he'd go back to working on his dissertation. That was it. That was his sad little apprenticeship, him paying his dues. I should have just supported him, but he wanted the damn job. Thought your father could help him find a university lectureship, that maybe he could make some calls. Lucien's eyes narrowed. My brother, he'd always been like that, so determined to prove his mettle, be better than his name. In some ways, I have to think he had it coming.
Did he?
Holmes said, like an echo.
Anyone that trusting? It's willful. It isn't instinct.
They're overriding their animal sense. But then mine has told me from the beginning that you're a dog that needs to be put down. And still, here we are, aren't we? With you still alive.
Are you done bloviating? Holmes asked him, and Anna's phone wobbled again. Do you need me to hold that for you? What's he calling you, girl?
Give me the phone, Anna, Lucian said, holding his hand out to her, and go fetch our little surprise.
She stumbled forward, pressing it into his hand, and there was a second's reprieve from the light before Lucian held the phone up himself. I could hear her footsteps down the hall.
Where were we? Holmes was asking, her voice like tempered steel. Was this the part where you were pretending that you hated your brother, that you think he deserved what was coming to him? It's rather funny, you know, it's been quite some time since I've been around someone who so thoroughly erased their tells. Your face doesn't give anything away. I imagine that's all the political training. Good job, you. You might as well be reading me the phone book.
I'm so happy you approve, he growled.
Yes, very nice work. Your gaze never wavers. You never look to either side. Even your eyelids are controlled. No blinking out of turn. Your hands as well. Very steady. And of course you don't shuffle your feet. You aren't a child.
Even now I could hear her satisfaction in the pleasure she found, even now, even despite everything, in reading him.
It makes it all the more impressive that your feelings are still so transparent.
Remind me why I'm listening to you, Lucian said. Remind me why I haven't just shot you down.
Holmes sighed.
Because you've had years of opportunity and made the decision to toy with me instead. This last year I was sending up flares. Lucian, you could have ended me at any moment. No, this is different. This is about justice, isn't it? This was about thinking you'd lost August only to discover that he was alive, and then you lost him a second time. Because of me.
The flashlight wavered, very, very slightly. My head was beginning to ache. I squinted against the light, shifted my weight slightly from knee to knee, tried to focus on the pain to keep from thinking. Holmes was just warming up.
All this, it's you making the kind of world you want. It's interesting. One would think from your actions that you were entirely amoral, and yet all along you've been living by your own code. It was all fine, wasn't it, when we were playing our prescribed parts? Hadrian and Philippa, your not-as-bright siblings. Tedious, but useful in their way. You, young master of the universe, running Britain's government behind the curtain. And August, your brother, the innocent. August living a life of the mind. August obsessed with maths. Can you think of a thing more pure, a thing further away from your dirty dealings? But it got muddy, didn't it? It got muddy when he came to work for my family. All this began there. Not with the drugs in the car, not with my stupid crush. It started when August walked through our front door, when he started playing politics. Because it was a political decision, wasn't it? He wanted a favor from my father. My father, whose last name made him nobler than you, no matter what terrible things he'd done. In the eyes of the world, you and your family would always be less than, because you were a Moriarty.
Brilliant, Lucian said hoarsely. I wished I could see his face. How much did you pay for that psychology course?
I've had quite a bit of time to think about it, Holmes was saying. I've had some time to put it together. I know, for instance, why you've turned a corner since August has died. Oh, sure, fucking with me was your hobby. But before his death, it was never your full-time job. Bryony Downs, you encouraged her with a few phone calls, then let her do the rest. Hadrian and Philippa, you don't trust either of them enough to tie your shoes, much less kill me. And poisoning my mother, that you arranged on your own, I'm sure of it. But you didn't stir yourself to do it. But look at us now, all together, one happy family. Honestly, Lucian, marrying Watson's mother, kidnapping his sister. That's grandstanding, and you know it.
Grief does that to a man, Lucian said. I couldn't believe that he was still standing there, listening to her. I couldn't believe I was still alive.
Of course you're grieving, Holmes snapped. Grief doesn't make you chuck over your whole life to go hunt down a teenage girl at her boarding school. No, it's more than that. I think you were happy when you thought August was dead. I think you were relieved. You could put him back up on his pedestal, no more of his pesky little life choices clouding up the narrative. You could make him a saint again. And when he died the second time, on the Holmes's estate, by a Holmes's hand, you saw a way to rewrite the story. A girl like me, a villain like me. I was an opportunity. What if the Moriartys were the victims all along? What if, horror of horrors, they were the heroes?
Shut your mouth, Lucien snarled, and I knew then that she'd won.
And that her victory didn't matter, not at all. Because he was going to kill me, quite literally at her feet, to make a point. As though I were a bag of garbage he needed to spill out on the ground. I guess I won't be going to prison then, I thought. I wanted badly then to look up at Holmes, to see what she was thinking, but I was too afraid to move my head.
A scuffling sound, a door opening. Go, Lucien was saying, and I could make out a small figure next to him, a bag over her head. Come here. When she didn't move, he said again, come. And for a moment, his flashlight beam blinked off and we were in darkness. Faster, Lucien was saying. The world sharpened slightly around me. Something had changed. Something small. A click. Where had it come from? From behind me? Was it just wishful thinking? Maybe it was because Lucien hadn't heard it. Take the gun from the holster on my hip, he said to the girl, and he clicked his flashlight on, its light trained on the floor. Why did Lucien need two guns? In that small moment of distraction, Holmes dropped something small and hard onto my legs, the backs of my calves specifically, which were out of Lucian's sight. She tapped her foot on the floor once in confirmation. She wanted me to know that she had done what she had done on purpose. Bring the gun to Charlotte, Lucien told the girl, and she did. Slowly, with dragging steps, and as she came closer, I could feel my vision start to go. I had assumed, dully, that he had dragged out Anna again, but this girl was smaller, slighter. Was she, or was I just imagining things? All I knew was that she had on a pair of gray Converses with mismatched laces, one pink, one green. My sister Shelby had shoes like that. Holmes, I said, low, and she said, Watson, I know. Shut up, Lucien said, and I saw then that he was shaking. Don't talk. Neither of you says a word, or this ends the fast way. Now, Shelby. Lucien lifted his gun so that it was pointed at Holmes. His flashlight ran over my face, my shoulders, the backs of my legs. I caught my breath. Shelby paused. She paused. And she handed Holmes the gun and backed away, backlit that gunny sack over her head like a girl playing a game, like a demon from a story. Kneel, Lucien said. Now go, at my feet. I couldn't help it. I made a horrible, inarticulate sound. Charlotte, keep the gun pointed to the ceiling. This is how we're going to do this, Lucien said. You'll follow my directions, or I'll shoot the girl right here. Do you understand? Yes, Holmes said steadily. Take three steps to your left. Keep the gun pointed up. Good. Turn. Back toward the boy. That's it. And the gun should be... Ah, I see you've guessed it already, clever girl. The gun should be pointed at little Shelby's head. I couldn't help it. I wrenched my head around to stare at Holmes. I needed the confirmation. Her pale face, the long line of her arms, the pistol at the end of them. Lucien laughed softly. You've been so quiet, Jamie. You don't have any questions for me. Holmes, I said. Holmes, please. Lucien, you don't want this. You don't. You can just have her. You can have her shoot me. You? He asked idly. I swallowed and plowed on. Wouldn't that be worse? Her killing her best friend? Like if you wanted to punish her or me... We are done, Lucien snarled, guessing at my motives. We only have a minute, you know. But you know, I'll humor you. I am punishing you. How about even if you get out of this, somehow your life will still be utterly ruined? How about you'll spend every night wondering what you could have done to save your sister's life? Try this. How about how your mother is doing? Back in the hotel room, crying over how her son is the kind of delinquent who beats up his new stepfather in a restaurant bathroom. No questions about what she'll say when they find your body here and haul away your ex-girlfriend in irons for this. She'll have no one to shelter her.
No sympathetic parents, no brother, no Watsons to take her in. No money, no one but herself. He hummed a little. I'm hoping to use my influence to get Charlotte committed, you know. I know this wonderful little hospital in D.C. that might be able to help her. I've been setting up a room for her there. Not a lot in it, truth be told. But then again, she won't need all that much. No, I said, my skin crawling. I don't have any questions for you. I wasn't going to go out listening to Lucien Moriarty monologue. And even if Holmes had come up with some kind of escape plan, if she had dropped a pistol or a knife or a bomb for me to use to get us out of this, I couldn't reach for it without Lucien gunning Shelby down first. Maybe I wasn't brave enough to try. That was that then. Shelby, I said desperately. It's okay. Don't speak to her, Lucien said. Or I will kill all three of you. You have a minute, Charlotte. James, you have permission to change your girlfriend's mind. It's Shelby's life or hers. I couldn't see well. It was true. The light from the phone flattened the world out, made it bright, took its detail away. Holmes looked like an illustration, a black and white sketch. Her long black sleeves, her shaking white hands, the gun. She had pointed it right between my eyes. I was close enough to see that she had bitten her lip through completely. Hey, I said. Hey, it's okay. It's not, she whispered. Of course it's not. It will be. You're going to be okay. Holmes shook her head tightly. Me? We are not talking about me. We are, I said. We are. Holmes, I can't make this decision. I'm not deciding between the two of you. I can't. Whatever you choose, the hard part's almost over. She was still shaking her head. I knew this would happen. What's the point of knowing if you can't stop it? Shelby wavered back and forth on her knees. No, hey, you couldn't have changed this. Don't worry. I'm not worried about me, Jamie, she said. I'm sorry. It's better like this. You have control over it this way. I'm sure you know where to shoot, right? So that it's over quickly? For Shelby? I swallowed. So that's better. It's better, see? You think I'd let her die? I don't know what I think. I can't think. I should have told you to run, she whispered. I laughed a little at that. What else was I to do? I think you did, but I'm kind of stubborn when it comes to you. She nodded. She squeezed her eyes shut. When she opened them again, I could see that she was furious. This is as bad as it gets, she said to me, and it was almost like she was giving me an order. The hard part's almost over. This is as bad as it gets. Lucien snorted. Adorable. Are you finished? The hard part's almost over. Just to be clear, Holmes said, her voice thick. What exactly will happen when I refuse to shoot her? I'll take care of you, he said, his gaze flickering over to her. Then, Shelby, don't think I'd be so stupid to keep my eyes off you for a... He didn't have time to finish his sentence. In the second his eyes were off me, I'd grabbed the pistol Holmes had dropped onto my legs and fired off two shots into the darkness. One went through the door into the room with all the bicycles. It narrowly missed clipping Shelby's shoulder. In that final second, kneeling there in the hallway, my world had narrowed to be so small, so claustrophobic, that I'd forgotten she was kneeling there. But she wasn't hurt, only startled enough to scream, to drop her phone, to pull the bag off her head. Because it wasn't Shelby at all. It was Anna Morgan Vilk, kneeling there in my sister's shoes, where her father had just offered her up as an honor killing. My other bullet went into Lucien Moriarty's leg. It was a lucky shot. I had never fired a gun before. He was screaming. He had gone down hard, and he was screaming, and God, I couldn't think. Did he still have his gun? No, I thought Holmes would have gotten it, and I had gone down to my hands and knees on the linoleum, my stomach heaving, my vision gone. Or was that the lights? I wanted to pass out, and there was so much noise in my ears, maybe from the gunshot, I tried to reorient myself. Fast footsteps coming toward me. I scrabbled back against the wall, put my hands up.
Anna? Was it Anna? Was she coming to finish the job? My eyes focused. Elizabeth. Elizabeth in her school blazer. Lena called the police, she said, crouching down beside me. She reached out to take my hand, but I jerked away from her. I couldn't be touched just then. I couldn't even look at her. I was staring up into the ceiling, Holmes's pistol in my hands. Elizabeth reached out and clicked the safety back on. Jamie, it's okay. Look, look, I have Lucian's gun, too. I have them both. See? Do you hear me? I nodded. She kept talking, trying to reassure me. It's okay. Anna was supposed to keep an eye on me, that's why I was down here, but she flipped out when she saw her dad, and I managed to text Lena from my pocket, and she said that Shepard's coming. He should be here any second. She had this plan with pulleys and, like, a feather duster, and I think she's really mad that she didn't get to do it. But it's okay. It's okay. Shepard, I guess, said he was waiting to hear that... She had turned to look at Holmes, who had, for the last few minutes, been quietly bleeding on the ground.
30. Charlotte. Time had gone fragmented. Strange. It stayed that way for some time. What I remembered? 1. Lucy and Moriarty shooting me in the shoulder while Watson fumbled for the gun. 2. The look on Lucy and Moriarty's face as he fired, something like an angel seeing the gates of heaven, exaltation, etc. It was fascinating. 3. Thinking, oh, I've been shot, in the same manner one would think about ordering takeout. 4. Watson yelling, a gurney, more yelling, mostly Watson, though I thought I heard Shepard join into the fray. Black, rolling black, laced through with bits of bright pain, and me saying, no morphine, you can't, I'm an addict. Or I thought I did. Could they hear me through the oxygen mask? A monitor, beeping. 5. I remember, too, asking for my mother. 5B. I didn't get my mother. I got my brother instead. 6. Milo shouting Watson down in an elevator, saying, this is your fault, this is your fault, you idiot child. 7. Morphine, which was something I could feel in my system even when that system was broken, blinking red. I could feel it even more then. 8. Leander, in a dark room that smelled like plastic. The hospital? He was saying something I couldn't hear. A national newspaper left on my dinner tray, open to the politics section. Someone had circled a headline. Morgan Vilk assists in manhunt. British national captured. 9. Shepard asking me questions. Shepard asking me questions the next day, and the next, and I dreamed them even when he wasn't there. How long did you know? Were you in touch with anyone at the yard? What happened to Anna Morgan Vilk? She's disappeared. 10. And Watson. Watson there every day, on the hard plastic couch next to Leander. Watson speaking with the nurse. Watson asleep with his head in his hands. Always there when I was struggling in or out of sleep, when I was still wordless, when my dreams were all red weather. Watson there until he wasn't. 31. Charlotte. 2 weeks later. I still couldn't move my arm. Or my shoulder. Or my neck. There was a physical therapist. We were practicing small motions together. It was straightforward and infinitely boring. The withdrawal from the morphine was something else, because it was all the same thing. Oxycodone, morphine, opioids, all of them, and my body rid itself of them the same way. Poorly. This was boring in its own way, too, but the nausea had passed by then, and the runny nose, the teary eyes, the dreams where I woke up screaming. I had hoped somehow that withdrawals this time would be different. It wasn't. Not really. Only the incessant yawning was new. My body demanded sleep it then refused to allow me. I spent nights watching the television bolted to the wall, shows mostly about men rebuilding houses. This has good bones, they would say, or this is a gut job.
The episodes about gut jobs brought back my awful stomach cramps, and so I moved on to hospital shows instead. Those annoyed the nurses, at least, and I felt a pathetic sort of triumph about that. The worst thing about the hospital is how available I had to be, a kind of girl art exhibit, there for gawking at, to be examined at all angles and interpreted. There were so many comments on my accent that I adopted a Texan swagger